Good evening, James McCanny here with my Science Hour, November 22nd, 2012, Thanksgiving Day evening. And tonight I will be talking about reflections, the history of the most important dates in history, the most important events in history, and how this is being subverted so that we become somebody else, some other group of people, and how important it is for us to really understand where we have come from, what the true history of the world is. So the most important days in history. So I look at this as kind of a Thanksgiving 2012 fireside chat, and I've asked many people out there to spend this hour, Thanksgiving evening, with the family listening to this show. And so I hope there are many, many people. I know there are many, many people, including kids and many new people possibly that have never heard this show before, heard me speaking before, listening to this. So first of all, I have a few quick announcements, and this will kind of set the stage for the rest of the show. Around the world right now, we're seeing austerity programs. They're literally called austerity programs. The people are being told life, the good life, isn't going to be there for you anymore. You're going to depend on the government to give you a bone, a very, very chewed on bone. Nothing left for you. You'll be lucky if you get a pittance, and you should be happy with this. This is so absurd because the world is a very, very rich place. And in many of the countries, their resources are being absconded with by international corporations, and they have no rights at all. They become slaves with international trade agreements that are great for big business, not great for the people. So why does that set the scene for talking about important dates in history? Because we are reverting back to some of the earliest days in our traditional history, one being the Passover. What were the conditions in the world during the time of the Passover? The events were that the people were enslaved economically. How do you enslave an entire population? Well, first of all, you take away their identity. Second of all, you bring in banking conditions that basically were outlawed after those events. They said you can't have this kind of banking, this predatory banking with interest. Compound interest is basically outlawed in the Old Testament. Why? Because it basically kills you. The terms they use today, mortgage and the amortization schedule, mort, the word mort is in there. That is from the Latin to kill you. People have forgotten their Latin or never knew it. But the banking community today is out there, and it's basically killing the society. And with it, we have the oil control of oil. Where did a lot of that oil come from? Oil came from above. It's very clear in the Old Testament, in the old texts, not just the Old Testament, but texts from all around the world, that oil came from above. And so the source of oil, very important. Where did it come from? Why do we have vast oceans of oil locked 18, 20,000 feet below the surface of the earth in deposits? Where did that come from? It didn't come from fern forests, I can guarantee you that. And it just didn't all of a sudden pop up down there 20,000 feet in vast oceans, 20,000 feet below the surface of the earth. Well, oil has come from outer space. Why does it come from outer space? Because when you understand that comets are not dirty snowballs, that comets are a discharge of the solar capacitor, when we pass through comet tails, we get water, we get all kinds of chemicals. We get hydrocarbons the rain of fire and naphtha, brimstone, the meteor streams that rained into the atmosphere, talked of by the ancients. We have gone through many comet tales and had many comet encounters throughout history. The Noah's flood, it rained for 40 days and 40 nights, torrential rains. But part of the point of this is that modern history has worked very hard, along with science, what they call science, to destroy these historical events. And so, anyway, I want to go through some modern historical events, including, one is the birth of Christ, a very important event. The House of David, part of the Israelite lineage talked of in the Old Testament. Today we have a major problem going on in the Mideast. And it centers around, and I found it amazing that even CNN yesterday finally broke down and said there has to be discussion here, but any discussion has to come, has to include the point of what are these people doing there? Why are people living in the country of Israel calling them, using that name for their homeland, so to speak, when they don't have a heritage there? This is the historical record. Where is it in the historical record in the Bible, the tradition of Western civilization, basically, that these people have a physical lineage to that area? And it's not there. It's unfortunate. But anyway, the discussion of this cannot be breached. And so any discussion of this point brings us back to the very earliest days before the Passover, with basically the destruction of the Hebrew nation, the true Israelite Hebrew nation, and which then after the Passover was dispersed. I'm also going to talk about Mark 13, chapter 13, verses 24 to 32, the famous end day prophecies, where Christ was asked, what's going to happen? And the disciples asked him, and he says, look, when you see these signs in the heavens, you look up. This is not something that's going to happen on earth. He did not mention any political events. He mentioned, look up and see the signs in the heaven. He said, that's when you're going to know that this baby is coming down. And also, the world leaders know this. And that's why they're desperately working for austerity programs. The world leaders I refer to are the banking community in Europe that run the Federal Reserve in the United States. They run the bank in Russia. They run the bank in China. And most other countries of the world, the countries that don't go along with this banking cartel, are considered axis of evil. They're the outcasts, the people that are communists, other names. And so the facade, the curtain that the Wizard of Oz hides behind in this modern day play that we're in here, the whole issue is just like the Wizard of Oz. Putting a curtain across to make it look like Oz is the wonderful golden city and we're all supposed to be going there. And there's hope that we're going to all be living in this wonderful city and that the wizard that lives in the city of Oz, the great wizard, can do everything. He can give us a heart. He can give us a brain. So give us our freedom. Wow. All of these people searching for these items, thinking that the great Oz is going to provide this to them, when that reality is not at all at hand. So just another quick couple announcements here. I wanted to talk about, and this also goes along with this idea. Let's look at some archaeological structures around the world that are earthquake-proof. These are massive pyramids in many cases, religious structures or ceremonial structures, and they are built so that no matter how hard they shake, so no matter how big an earthquake shakes them, they will not tumble and fall. The Great Pyramids are such a building. They are built so that no matter how hard they get shaken, they will remain standing. Remember that what we see now, the Great Pyramids of Giza, the siding of that was taken off and used for other purposes. It used to be, in historical times, sheathed with massive stone plates that led up to a golden peak, a golden cap that sat right at the very top. And what was this structure all about? For one thing for sure is that it was used to collect electricity. There's a joke that had been used for years and years by the guides in Egypt. They would take people up. They would literally climb up the rock walls of the pyramid. And I have pictures of people doing this. It's not like I would personally want to do this, but they have a path that they follow up. And they go all the way to the top. And then they give the person a wine bottle, of all things, and tell them to hold it up. And those people get a tremendous electrical shock. And the whole point is that at the tip of the pyramid, you basically are extending ground, the ground potential, the electrical ground potential, because of the pyramid, is extended up to the tip top point of that pyramid. And in ancient times, that was used to collect electricity with the golden cap. Electricity collected in this fashion was used around the world. The fact of this matter is held from the public. The very existence of this, there's a story that George Bush Sr., back, I don't know if it was before his reign of presidency, or I think it was during his reign as president, went to the Mideast, and the secret groups that operate the world basically were going to recap the pyramid and put a giant gold cap up on the pyramid. And they decided not to do it, which I found very interesting and strange. Why did they not do it? Because it would give away their biggest secret. The secret that has been held, that has been blocked, that Tesla had discovered or rediscovered and built his Tesla towers back in the early 1900s. And basically the purpose of that tower was to collect energy from the ionosphere. Where does this electrical energy come from? And now I should insert here, there's a lot of misinformation on the internet today about free energy. People running around claiming there's a box, you can put it on your table, and all of a sudden all the energy you would ever need will come flowing out of this box. No, that's not the reality. There's no wormhole that energy is just going to flow out of into your house. Electricity needs a circuit. And in Tesla's, with Tesla's tower, by the way, there's a movie circulating about Sherlock's Holmes. It's shown on airplanes. It's shown in public places. It's one of the most publicly shown movies, even though it's really not that great a movie. And it shows Tesla as a person who was distributing power with his towers. And this is a huge misnomer. The real purpose of the tower was to collect energy. And if you understand the contractual situation between Westinghouse and Tesla, the contract was this. And here's what actually happened historically. So this is a great time to discuss this. Back in the early 1900s, late 1800s, there was a move to go to electricity. Tesla's AC style of electricity went out over the DC version that was being promoted by other powerful engineering entities at the time. The AC current had definite advantages. But at any rate, Tesla sold his technology to Westinghouse. under contract. And he did a very subtle thing in the contract. Knowing what he knew, he got, I believe, around $4 million, which was a pretty good chunk of change back then, back in the early 1900s. He did not have a non-compete clause in his contract because Westinghouse never imagined that there would be any competition. So basically the AC three-phase motors, the types of the generators that are still in use today, were in the package. The distribution, the AC, the transformers, everything that we use today in electrical distribution and generation was in that contract. But Tesla did something very strange. He requested in the contract that we have a that he would have the ability at any time to use power off the grid, off the electrical grid, and use the power that Westinghouse was generating with his turbine generators, that Tesla could use unlimited amounts of power for a very brief amount of time, and he would put it back. And I think it's very strange. You would imagine Westinghouse with his attorneys and scientists and engineers would have been, well, where is he going to get this energy to put back? But they didn't think about it. So anyway, that's the way the contract read. And so Tesla went about building his towers. They're basically a 40-hertz Schmitt trigger Tesla tower. Oscillates between very high positive voltage and a very low negative voltage, 40 times a second approximately, and it's basically what it does is it can tunnel electrically by, it's basically an antenna. It flips the diodes in the atmosphere back and forth and back and forth, and over time, if you do this and build up enough power, you can actually tunnel, you can align the dielectric molecules electrically in the atmosphere and drill a hole above that Tesla tower till the hole basically reaches the ionosphere, which is a great capacitor, and drain that capacitor, causing electrical current to flow, basically unlimited electrical current, which is part of our overall solar system electric current. And this is what my work rediscovered back in the mid-1970s to late 1970s, and I discovered what was the cause of this electrical energy. Tesla did not know about the solar wind. He did not know about electrical conditions in up in the ionosphere. He didn't know how they were coupled together. But he knew that there was a vertical electric field, and that's what you had to do to tap into it. So at any rate, he built his tower. He started collecting electrical energy, but he needed that power off the grid that Westinghouse was developing, the power from the standard type of generators, to power up his Tesla tower. And of course, once he connected into the ionosphere, he had all the power he needed. He could put it back on Westinghouse's grid, and he would have his own free source of power. Westinghouse reacted by sending out his goons to tear down the Tesla tower. I have a picture of it on my website, jmccsci.com, and you can see a picture of this tower. It's not a little teeny tower. It's a massive, massive structure built with wooden beams. It's, I forget how high, I don't have that number off the top of my head, many hundreds of feet up in the air, and it has a massive metal dome with pins sticking out in all directions. Housed in the building below were the Schmitt trigger generators and the electronics to power this massive antenna to drill through the atmosphere and to gather unlimited free power. Well, Westinghouse didn't buy this technology to distribute electricity and generate electricity to have somebody come along, garner it for free, and compete with him. How could he compete with free electricity? And as I said, there's a lot of misinformation about free energy on the internet today, basically to distort the topic. But at any rate, the point is Tesla had discovered or rediscovered the ability that was used on the Great Pyramid to collect energy. Now, you can't tell me that the ancient pharaohs with a bunch of slaves in loincloths with pulling hemp ropes or something built these pyramids. I'm sorry, but there was some major technology going on then. If you hired a company or all the companies in the world today and brought them together with all the engineering expertise, all of the equipment that we have today, and you said, build us a pyramid equivalent to even the smallest Egyptian pyramid or other pyramids around the world, they couldn't do it. They could not do it. Some of the other massive installations, artifacts, archaeological treasures from around the world show massive, massive stonework moved and placed in just intricate precision. The way the Incas put massive stones together, and we are expected to do this with a few people cracking corn out in the field. And no, not at all. This was done by super races that lived before, and they all disappeared during the time of the Great Flood and also during the time of the Passover, both of which were events that occurred in history when much of the world's populations went under, let's put it that way. Then, that's why I wanted to talk about earthquake-proof structures that were built around the world. Why did they build those structures? Because they knew someday this earth would be shaken to the knees. And I find it interesting that when the apostles, this was in last Sunday's gospel around the Christian world, the gospel of Mark, chapter 13, verses 24 to 32, talks about what Christ said when the apostles asked him about the end days. Where's this all going? And he said, when you look up, you're going to see the signs in the heavens, and the sun will be blotted out. What is that? That's the comet tail. We're entering a comet tail where the sun is blotted out. The moon will no longer shine. The moon will turn to blood. Those are the volcanic eruptions on the moon. The same thing is going to be going on Earth. The stars will fall from the skies. Will the stars literally fall from out in the galaxy? No. These are the meteor streams. It'll appear as if the stars are shooting in from the skies. So these are figurative images that we're to look for. And it's you're going to look up. We happen to have a comet coming into the solar system right now, designated C2012S1, and then in parentheses ISON for the Russian observatory that discovered the comet last September. But within a year, we're going to see one of the most massive cometary displays in modern history. So this is going to be happening on our little planet Earth. In my previous shows, I've been discussing this extensively. I'm not going to talk about that comet much tonight, other than these are possibly the beginnings of the signs in the heavens. And it's not just going to be one comet. There could be many comets, the beginning of this entourage of events. But if the people in charge know about this, they have access to what I call the tier one level of science. Now, since many new people are listening out there tonight, I have to go through this discussion and let you understand something very basic about science today. Science that you, even if you have a PhD in astronomy, if you have a PhD in geology or meteorology, there's some things that you're not taught, and they're not even included. There's an expression that 4% of modern knowledge is taught in the universities. The other 96% you never see. And it's really true. It's something that I've learned the hard way through my research and associations as I worked through the science world and viewed it from both inside and outside. There is a tier one layer of science that you never see. Well, who controls that science? Where does it go? Who pays for it? Who gets the benefit of that? And the answer is that you do not. That's the first thing you have to know. So there's a tier two layer of science out there that most people think is the very top layer of science. NASA, the space shuttle, the International Space Station, the Hubble telescope, and the Mars rovers. I could go on and on. But this is not the top level of science. This is the garbage science that's pawned off on the public to make you think you're smart and you really know, and boy, isn't it amazing what the scientists are doing out there. The reality is that the real top level of science you will never see, and you have never seen. And this, who controls this then? Well, it's controlled by the same interests that control our government, the European banking cartels. Why do they keep the people stupid? It's like I say, in the Middle Ages, they taught the common people that the earth was flat. Everybody in the position of power knew that the earth was round. They knew that the earth was round and that it was not flat. The ancient Greeks had measured the circumference of the earth and the diameter and the radius of the earth. Not exactly, but fairly closely. So why was it taught that the earth was flat? Well, that was for the common people. That was so that nobody got the big idea that they were going to send out in a ship across the ocean. Why not? Because it kept them basically mentally enslaved. It kept them there, kept them doing their job. And there were many other... Today there's a lot of science that is flat earth science. Simply wrong. Could not possibly be true. But it's taught in our schools, in our universities, and the kids learn this and they think that they're learning top level science. But at any rate, the point is that we are, as a civilization, have lost who we are because we do not connect with those ancient events. So this is kind of a preface to tonight's show. With this in mind, I'm going to start talking about the most important events in history and how we have to understand them this day, November 22nd, 2012, Thanksgiving Day in the United States. Just a couple other quick notes before I start this. Last July, and this did not make a lot of fanfare, the U.S. Department of Agriculture set out a report that said that 2012, the summer drought of 2012, was the worst and largest scale natural disaster in the history of the United States. Never made much of the news, never was very noteworthy, but that's pretty amazing given that back in the 1930s, the Dust Bowl, many, many people died. Today we are seeing a lot of poverty in the United States, which leads me to the next topic of tent cities. Tent cities around the United States where people literally have found a place and are putting up tents and living. These are homeless people, people that 2 years ago were making $100,000 a year in living in a beautiful house are now living in a tent, living in their car, moving from place to place, have moved in with a relative, have no place to go. This is in supposedly the greatest country of the world. We just had Hurricane Sandy move into the northeastern part of the United States, and then followed by amazing winter, very early winter storm that basically drove out the poor people. It was basically a social cleansing, if you want to look at it that way. nobody could live up in the Northeast heading into winter with the thought of that, with the conditions. There was no electricity. It basically drove out anybody, and they told everybody there, get out. Everybody leave. Well, the point is that most of those people on marginal incomes, etc., were never able to come back. Just like New Orleans, a social cleansing. Nobody knows where all those people went to. Where did they go? Where did they end up? But we're starting to see this around the world. Austerity programs, social cleansing, I call it, geopolitical social cleansing, basically, of our populations. The only people left are those that are viable workers. The people that are marginal have been, they've left. They can't go back. They can't go back to face a winter when they don't have any means to support themselves, because let's face it, the Northeast part of the United States does not produce a lot of self-sustaining materials, resources. That all comes shipped in from other places. So as far as basic sustenance, unless you have some way of making money there and trading that money for your sustenance, you're not going to be there. A social cleansing of the area. So let's go back to Noah's flood. Was Noah's flood, like modern science tries to propound today, they try and say that Noah's flood was a breach in a dam over by the Mideast, and it flowed into the Mediterranean, and that was Noah's flood. How absurd. What a ridiculous concept. When you read the story of Noah's flood, it was 40 days and 40 nights. It was actually about 44 days and 44 nights of torrential rain. Now, we've all been in a hard rainstorm. Imagine this going on for 40 days and 40 nights. We're talking, you know, an inch of rain per minute, or I'm sorry, an inch of rain per hour, more or less, or 10 inches per day, let's say. We've seen the effects of this, the Duluth flood of last spring, where tremendous amounts of water, 10 inches of rain fell. The Duluth is a very hilly city. The water was literally 3 feet deep on the hillsides. It rained so hard the water couldn't get out of there. There was rain, there was rivers pouring down the streets, ripping up the streets, and then it stopped. Imagine this going on for 40 days and 40 nights. There wouldn't be anything left there. It would all be washed off into the ocean. I want the kids to do a little project here when I get done with this show. Go to Google Maps. Everybody has Google Maps. And when you first pull it up, you get basically a map of the United States, of the world. I want you to zone in on the eastern United States seaboard and go up off of Rhode Island, and what you're going to see as you start zooming in, you're going to see the continental shelf that extends out, and you could go all around the eastern part of the United States, around the tip of Florida, and then out into the Gulf of Mexico, and what you're going to see is a vast area that's a big shelf, and then it drops off. That's the old ocean level. The oceans have risen about 300 to 600 feet within historical times. That was the Great Flood. The water went someplace, and that's the Earth's oceans literally rose that much. Now, I want you to go specifically off of Rhode Island, and I want you to look at something. I want you to look at where that continental shelf ends. So you go out 200, 300, 400, or 500 miles offshore, looking at Google Maps, because Google Maps shows you the underwater terrain also. And I want you to see where that terrain drops off. That's a big cliff that runs all the way along the outside of the United States, but hundreds of miles out from our current coastline. And look at the underwater rivers there. There are rivers that are carved into the ocean, massive, massive rivers. Where did these rivers come from? Riverbeds do not form under the ocean. I don't care who you are or what planet you live on or what solar system or what galaxy you're in, rivers do not form under the ocean. So start asking yourself, where did these rivers form? What happened? What you're looking at is the result of the Noah's flood that happened probably about 6,000 years ago, maybe farther back in history. We don't have a good date. It rained for 40 days and 40 nights. And here's the best example of something that has been pushed back in history, eliminated. They don't talk about it in the churches. They don't talk about it in history. I once had a friend who taught history in the Florida school system, high school history, honors high school history. And so I picked up the textbook for the honors high school history in Florida, the state chosen textbook for public schools in Florida. And I'd started looking through it, and okay, that's very interesting. So I flipped back to the beginning of the, which would tell us the beginning of the history of the world. And I started reading this story that couldn't possibly be true. And I said to the teacher, I said, and this is a person who was the, you know, a long-standing teacher in the Florida school system, I said, where's the story about the Great Flood? And she laughed at me and she goes, well, we don't teach that. That's just fairy tale. We don't teach that in school. The most important formative event in the history of the world, the Noah's Flood, in which the majority of people died, is not taught. It isn't taught in anywhere. It's not recognized as a part of our history. How can you talk about the development of the human race? The atmosphere was different before the Noah's Flood. They didn't know about rainbows, remember? Remember after Noah's Flood? The rainbow came out, and that was to tell that the rain had stopped. The reason they didn't have rainbows before Noah's Flood is because the atmosphere was different. There was a vast canopy of heavy haze and very heavy water. And so it made the weather on Earth like a great greenhouse. That was very different. And so there was, the oxygen content was very much higher. That's why in the winter time here, people have to put all kinds of lotions on their skin to be so they're not dehydrated. We developed as a human race in a very different atmosphere. But go, kids, look off of that coast of Rhode Island. Go into Google Maps, look 200-300 miles out into the ocean, and look at all those rivers that form and they cascade off of those cliffs. This is under the ocean. Ask yourself, where did those riverbeds come from? And you'll realize that, yeah, the ocean levels rose. 40 days and 40 nights of torrential rain. Where did that water come from? The water came as we passed through the tail of a massive comet. Are comets dirty snowballs? No. They are not a dirty snowball. They are a discharge of the solar capacitor. That water is being drawn into the comet nucleus. In the comet, the big ones, the really, really big ones, are planets in the formative stage of their of existence. We have seen comets like Hale-Bopp spend 6 years in the solar system, and NASA tries to tell you that that's a little teeny snowball out there, just melting in the sun. So I want to ask people who have never heard this before, well, how could NASA be wrong? Well, there's a lot of reasons for this, but basically this is Tier 2 science. Let's just ask ourselves a question. If you look at a comet, it's supposed to be a little snowball out there, and it's melting away and the causing the vapor that's blown away in the solar wind, and that causes the tail you see. Just imagine we have sent spacecraft to comet nuclei. They've come right up next to the nuclei of comet. And guess what? The sun's not visible there. The solar wind is not visible there. It's blocked. How can this comet keep forming if the sun is blocked and there's no sunlight hitting the nucleus? How does this process keep going on? when they've gotten to the nucleus of a comet, we've visited, I believe, 5 comet nuclei now, they're hot black rocks. There's no water coming off of it. There's no trace of water on the nucleus. How can NASA keep claiming that these are dirty snowballs? Well, you have to understand, and this is part of the main point of my most recent book, The Diamond Principle, is that there is a whole flat Earth group of scientific concepts that are being taught to the public, taught to the kids in school. Why? Because if you knew what was really going on out there, you would start to ask questions. You would start to realize what Tesla was doing. You would start to realize that there's a tremendous amount of electrical energy passing by us every day in the solar system, and yes, we can grab onto some of that, bring it in, and power our nations with this for free. We don't need oil. We don't need wars in the Middle East. We don't need coal, and we don't need nuclear power. We never needed any of this. We had the technology in the early 1900s to basically live off of this tremendous electrical power. So when George Bush, who represents the oil and the banking industry, George Bush Sr., back in the early 1990s, went over to Egypt and they were going to put a big golden cap up on the pyramid, and they all of a sudden decided not to, why did they not do that? Well, it would have shown the public the real purpose of one of the real purposes of the pyramid, and that was to collect electrical energy. And the next thought would be, well, what do we have oil for? When, you know, of course, the Bush family is a little bit big in oil. And, of course, international interests all the way up to the highest level of power in the world, the control of oil. We are all under the thumb of oil, the huge gas prices we're paying. Why does oil and gasoline, why does gasoline cost 4 cents a gallon in Venezuela? Because that should be the normal price of gasoline. We're paying 10 times that here, 100 times, I'm sorry. We're paying 100 times that here by artificially structured energy costs. We're paying hundreds of times the real cost of electrical and nuclear power, coal, nuclear, primarily are generating electrical power. We're paying a tremendous premium artificially. And so let's go back to the Noah's Flood. What's the second most important, or equally important, but another event in history? This is the Passover. The Passover is an event where the Israelite Hebrews went into their shelters. These were basically mud huts, and they were to seal the door. They were to kill a lamb, paint the blood above the door at the doorstep, and seal the doors and windows and stay in there until told to leave. During that time, there was a lot of death in the area in Egypt. Is where that story comes from, but the same story is recounted by the Maya. The Lakota Indians of the Dakotas talk about the same event. They had a Passover where they had to go into their shelters, seal them, and I mean seal them, so no air came in or out, and they had to stay in there for a long duration. We don't really know how long. Was it 2-3 days? Was it a week? Was it a month? We don't know, but they had to have all of their food in their shelters. Why was this? Because during that time, a comet came by, and I talked about this on many of my recent programs, that the Passover, when you look at the events leading up to that, the flies, the plagues of Egypt, the river turning to blood, I talked about that, the sulfur dioxide that came in as the comet connected out to the region around Jupiter, and the flow of dust and gases from that region around Jupiter came in, some of it pouring into our atmosphere. They termed it the red hand of death. And this is why they sealed their houses, and the people lived through this. They were alive to recount this. This is another event that's been completely distorted throughout history. And then after this event is when the Israelites, the Hebrews, followed Moses out into the desert and wandered there for 40 years. Why did they wander in the desert for 40 years? Because basically there was no place to go. Everything had been destroyed, including Egypt, including the major cities of Egypt. The people had died, and they lived in the desert for 40 years until they finally migrated into the area which is now Jerusalem. Thousands of years later, and that's, you have to look at the Old Testament. The Old Testament does two things. It tells us about this major event that happened. It tells us about the genealogy of the people all the way down to Christ. And the United States at one time was a Christian nation. It has been subverted. It has been changed. It has been altered. When the United States formed, and this is another one of the greatest days in history, was the American Revolution, where they threw out the European bankers. England was one of the central positions of banking from Europe. Why was England a center of European banking? Because they had married into the Rothschild family. The kings of England were related to the European Rothschilds. That was all sanctioned marriages that went back through history, and the United States was just another colony under the thumb of the King of England. And the Revolution, make no mistake about it, the Revolution was about one thing and one thing only, and that was to get rid of the European banking. It gave Congress the ability to create money using the gold standard and precious metals, and it gave them the ability to run the economy of the United States. All of this has been subverted. So what's the point here? Who's the people that are subverting everything that happens to be good and clean about the United States? Well, some people say it's the communists. Some people say they look at other groups. People think it's just the random influx of music that influences our kids. But the issue here is very severe. We're on the brink of World War III. The Mideast is exploding in violence, and all of this was predicted. And so I'm going to let the people out there kind of sort through this themselves. These are very touchy issues. But the lineage of the Bible is very clear. And this is one very, very important point that brings us right up to the cauldron in the Mideast today. What is the historical lineage of the people who moved into Israel, the Israelites, the Hebrews? And who are the people that are there now who are claiming to have that descendancy who really do not? That is a major question. And that's why nobody wants to talk about this, but the people in the United States are having their heritage robbed because the leaders will not talk about this. The leadership of this country will not discuss that issue. In any discussion of peace in the Mideast on this Thanksgiving Day 2012 has to include the origins, the genetics, the genealogy of the people coming down through the Bible, the Hebrews, the Israelites, leading down to the birth of Christ, leading up to the American Revolution, and the problems that occurred that started in 1913 when the banks created legislation the day before Christmas, passing the banking acts that established the Federal Reserve taxation and began the endless string of wars that we have been under since then. with presidents now claiming that the wars will last forever, the holy eternal wars of the United States against the all of these boogeymen out there will never end. The United States is in a very severe situation today, and nobody will talk about the core issues. The rest of the world, and like I said, when I began this, I was amazed that yesterday CNN actually breached the topic that this has to come under a point of discussion. And to open up discussion, the inevitable has to be discussed. What are the historical rights of the people that are claiming Israel is their homeland? This is a major touchy issue. People on the news are not allowed to talk about this. There are laws against discussing this. Why? Because it's a very touchy topic with certain people. Because it leads to the discussion of history. The history of Noah's flood, the history of the Passover, the birth of Christ, the American Revolution, the 1913 taking over of the United States by banking, and the situation we're in right now, where the International Monetary Fund, which represents the World Bank, is going around country by country, Greece, Turkey, now Europe. All this past week, Europe completely shut down because of strikes, because the people are not accepting the banking proposal for austerity. This is the world situation right now, and by the way, everybody listening tonight, this idea of austerity programs coming from the government being administered by the International Monetary Fund through banking loans, this is coming to the good old United States and coming soon. Now that the election is over, these programs will be installed here soon. Why are there tent cities? Why are there people that, and if you're still employed, you're still doing well, I'm glad to hear that, but this may not be the case in the future. And when people start to realize that it's their future that is at stake, that pretty soon they will be the ones, Hostess Cupcake Company going out of business this past week, 18,500 employees without a job, in a flash, a flick of a finger, a blink of an eye, 18,500 employees on one of the, you would consider, an old stable company in the United States, Hostess, a company all of a sudden out of business. Where are these people going to go? They're just the lost people. There's no, lost pensions, lost work, everything they've worked for, going under in a flash. These austerity programs are coming to the United States. And I know that everybody out there understands this. If they have a job, if they have any kind of income, the houses are all upside down in value. And so if somebody wanted to move to get a better job, you could not. Everybody here is locked in. What does that have to do with the Passover? Ask yourself, how did an entire nation become enslaved? Remember that Pharaoh in ancient Egypt believed he owned those people. When Moses went to him and said, leave these people go, Pharaoh said, no, those are my people. They belong to me. That same concept, that same belief, that same overall view of the world is going on today, that the leaders in the banking community literally view the public as their owned commodity. They are viewed as a commodity in business. Employees are viewed as a line item on a spreadsheet. They're not viewed as human beings with a life, with a family. How can it be that massive numbers of people in the United States are being thrown out of their homes? It's not a house, it's a home. It's where people live, it's where families live. Our families are being destroyed because the values, the family values, are being destroyed in this country. They're being taken over and destroyed, and that's the heart of the United States, was the family. All of this occurring as we are about to see in the upcoming year, about a year from now, a little less than a year from now, next September, and this is what I've been talking about on previous shows, we're going to start to see signs in the heavens. And I always wondered about this program of 2012, the end of the world, program that everything was supposed to end on December 21st, 2012. I'm starting to realize that that was a massive misinformation campaign so that everybody would hear this, and when December 21st comes, everybody will laugh and say, nothing happened, the world is still here, and don't ever look for those celestial events. That's just those goofy people over there, those 2012 cult groups or whatever they want to talk them, to talk to aliens. And people will go about their business forgetting that what's really going on in the world and what's about to come around the corner. So at any rate, one thing I promote is being prepared, and that is very evident if you go to my webpage. I want people to go to my webpage. When you have time, there's about pushing 5 gigabytes of information on the page, including all of my previous radio shows are archived there. The webpage is www.jmccsi.com. Seven letters, JMCCSCI.com, and get a big cup of coffee or a big gallon, couple gallons of your favorite juice or whatever, and there's a lot of information there. It's a lot of information that I have learned over the years. It's not something I read on somebody else's webpage and try and copy it or promote something else. No, this is from my decades and decades of being a scientist, a physicist, understanding science from inside government programs and outside. I've never worked for the government and have always been an independent scientist. But tonight I wanted to do some reflections and let people know that preparedness is very simple. Once you're prepared, it doesn't matter if there's a drought, if there's a man-made event, if there's a natural event or some major event like an earthquake or a volcanic eruption or whatever it is, you can be prepared, and preparation is the same. Want to thank everybody for listening. I know there are many families out there on this Thanksgiving Day 2012, and I wish you all the best. If you're prepared to live at any level, including a very basic level, if all the utilities go out, then you're going to be a much happier group of people, your family, etc. And just don't get bent out of shape over it. Just get prepared. It's very simple. And then you know that you can exist for weeks, possibly months, if necessary. This is Jim McCanney. This is my Science Hour. And as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.